I love poetry. It touches me in ways that prose can't. I think poetry reaches into our unconsciousness. I'll hold on to a line in a poem even though I don't even understand what it means. And my unconscious works on it and often will offer me the gift of what that line needs to say to me. I often use poems as an addition, as a reading in a service, to enhance the sermon and raise the topic in a different way. But a couple of years ago, I had a service where poetry was the star, and my sermon was reflections on a series of poems. And I liked it so much that this is the third time that I'm doing it. I love it that you send me poetry. People in the congregation send me poems that they've written or poems that have spoken to them, and I have a wonderful folder that I draw from when I have a need for a poem. So this year, I usually start with a theme, but this year I started with the poem, and the theme revealed itself to me, and then two other poems came to me as fitting nicely with this theme. These are all favorite poems of mine. One I've kept in my special things file for about 25 years. Now, I know that you guys all braved the marathon traffic to get here. Some of you probably took you 20 minutes longer than normal. So I'm going to reward you by telling you the point of the sermon right off the top. Are you ready for it? Yes. Letting go is hard. Letting go, one of the primary tasks of our life. Letting go means learning to be your own separate and whole person, to not be dependent on the behavior of others for your own happiness and fulfillment. Letting go means not having your own happiness dependent on someone else being happy. Now, there might be a few of us here that are a wee bit controlling. Often, a learned behavior, learned in childhood, very good reasons why we do it. Managing anxiety and outcomes. Controlling is kind of the opposite of letting go. Others of us can be overly dependent on another person's happiness in order to be happy ourselves. The message of the Buddha was that our suffering comes from expectation and attachment, grasping to hold on to people and things, to have them be the way we want them to be, to keep them. Liberation can come from letting go of these attachments and expectations. A critical lesson I learned from Buddhism is that you can't control other people. You can't really control what will happen to you. You can control the choices that you make, and you can control how you react to what happens to you. So let's explore these ideas through the words of poets. We have three poems today to share with you. Each poem will be read before my homily and afterwards, and you have copies of all three poems in the white insert in your order of service. So let us begin.
Our first poem today is called The Secret by Denise Levertov. Denise Levertov was born in Ilford, Essex, England in 1923. During World War II, Levertov became a civilian nurse serving in London throughout the bombings. She wrote her first book, The Double Image, while she was between the ages of 17 and 21 and moved to the United States in 1948. After her move to the U.S., Levertov was introduced to the transcendentalism of Emerson and Thoreau and the formal experimentation of Ezra Pound, and in particular, the work of William Carlos Williams. Levertov went on to publish more than 20 volumes of poetry. She died on December 20, 1997 from complications of lymphoma. She was 74. This poem was written in 1966. The Secret by Denise Levertov. Two girls discover the secret of life in a sudden line of poetry. I, who don't know the secret, wrote the line. They told me through a third person. They had found it, but not what it was, not even what line it was. No doubt by now, more than a week later, they have forgotten the secret, the line, the name of the poem. I love them for finding what I can't find, and for loving me for the line I wrote, and for forgetting it so that 1,000 times till death finds them, they may discover it again in other lines, in other happenings, and for wanting to know it, for assuming there is such a secret. Yes, for that most of all.
When I was a member of this congregation in the late 80s, there was an interim minister, Eileen Karpeles. And I remember a sermon she gave that called Secrets That Ministers Hold. I'll never forget a part of that sermon, and the poem reminded me of that part. She told us a story in that sermon about how after one of her services, a congregant came up to her and said, I have to tell you, when you talked about the importance of being kind to your children, it really spoke to me directly. It made a big difference for me. And in her sermon, Eileen revealed that never anywhere in her sermon did she mention being kind to children. You never know what people will take from what you put out into the world. In our worship retreat yesterday, the Religious Services Committee met. We talked about our job to create a container for worship, to have a structure that's good, the aesthetics good, all be confident and poised in our presentation, but that it's up to you to take away something. It's up to you to take the invitation to have an experience. What we're hoping for is some sense of worship or transformation in your lives, but we can't stand outside with a clipboard and say, and were you transformed today in the service? I had someone come up to me a couple of years ago and told me that a sermon I gave 15 years ago changed her life. I wasn't a minister 15 years ago, but I did give a sermon. She remembered the sermon, unlike the girls in the poem. I love it that the poet takes delight in these girls not remembering the secret, not even really remembering the poem. There's no expectation in the poet of any kind of reward that's attached to her. Her reward is more about the knowledge that these girls had this experience. She has no expectation, no attachment to the outcome of her poem. This is not just an issue for ministers and poets of putting things out there in the world and not knowing and not being attached to the results of those. In our interdependent web, we like to believe that the things we do make a difference, but often we don't know how or when or if. We don't get to know the outcomes often of things that we do in our daily lives. Did that person that we were kind to at the store go home and be nice to their wife who's depressed and struggling? Sometimes in our little kindness interactions or our ways of trying to put goodness out in the world, we attach expectations or to the outcome. A little bit of our ego gets attached to them. I think driving is a good example of this. You kindly and generously let somebody in, and then what is that about? They don't thank you. In fact, I'm not going to let anybody else in because that person didn't even thank me. So not only are you attached to the expectation of an outcome, but you are holding a grudge for any other driver who potentially may not thank you. In the poem, Levertov models letting go of these expectations. She's happy they found the secret, happy that they forgot it, and happy that they might be able to find it again. She doesn't express any need to know what the line of poetry is. Her gratitude and her happiness is that they found it and they may find it again and again in other places. Her true delight is that they have the capacity to find the secret of life 1,000 times until death. Can we find delight in the possibility that our actions make a difference, whether or not we know the outcome, whether or not we get credit?
The poet Marge Piercy was born in March of 1936 in Detroit, Michigan, to a working-class family. Piercy studied at the University of Michigan. Throughout the 1960s, she worked as an organizer of various political movements. Throughout her life, Marge Piercy has published approximately 20 novels and 20 books of poetry. And this poem was published in 1980. To have without holding. Learning to love differently is hard. Love with the hands wide open, love with the doors banging on their hinges, the cupboard unlocked, the wind roaring and whimpering in the rooms, rustling the sheets and snapping the blinds that thwack like rubber bands in an open palm. It hurts to love wide open, stretching the muscles that feel if they are made of wet plaster, then of blunt knives, then of sharp knives. It hurts to thwart the reflexes of grab, of clutch, to love and let go again and again. It pesters to remember the lover who is not in the bed, to hold back what is owed to the work that gutters like a candle in a cave without air, to love consciously, conscientiously, concretely, constructively. I can't do it. You say it's killing me, but you thrive. You glow on the street like a neon raspberry. You float and sail a helium balloon, bright bachelor's button, blue and bobbing on the cold and hot winds of our breath, as we make and unmake in passionate diastole and systole the rhythm of our unbound bonding, to have and not to hold, to love with minimized malice, hunger and anger moment by moment balanced.
Do any of you remember that bit on Saturday Night Live called Deep Thoughts? They would have this picture of like a seagull flying, and there'd be some pithy words that almost sounded real but weren't quite. I always think of that, and with this poem, I thought of a phrase that reminded me of this deep thoughts idea. Some of you may remember it. I think it's from the 70s. If you love something, set it free. If it comes back to you, it's yours. If it doesn't, it was never meant to be. Sounds like a deep thought. I think it comes from Jonathan Livingston Seagull. Wow, that dates me right there. Some of you are nodding your heads. But it's true. I don't know the part about it's yours. It's not really ever yours. But it's the fundamental aspect of love, letting go, loving and letting go, to have without holding. So that's a hell of a poem by Marge Piercy. It's got a lot of words in it, a lot of alliterations. She starts in a really exhilarating way, expansive, this idea of loving open. She says, love with the hands wide open, love with the doors banging on their hinges, the cupboards unlocked, the winds roaring and whimpering in the rooms. It sets the stage for this idea of an open, wide love. I found myself excited and a little frightened by those lines. In the last poem, we were talking about letting go of our attachments to others that we don't really know very well, those strangers that we connect with. Here we're talking about deeper relationships, the love of a partner, the love of a parent, the love of a child. Loving wide open is hard. I think that Piercy really gets it, that sense of wanting to hold tight to the people you love, to keep them happy and safe, to be confident in their love and their commitment to you. Parents know this, letting their child take that first step on their own, letting them struggle and fall, learning to pick themselves up. Spouses know this, partners know this. It's hard to watch your spouse struggle or be frustrated. You want to make it right for them. You want to make it good for them. If only they did what you told them to do, it would go so much better. Piercy says, it hurts to thwart the reflexes of grab and clutch. I remember about 6 years ago, my spouse was deciding whether to retire or not, and there was a buyout thing. We both used to work at the University of California, and there was a buyout program. And she was miserable, hated her job. She'd start to cry on Sunday night because she had to go to work on Monday. And I'm like, how is this a hard decision? But the hardest thing for me was to just let her have it. Just let her have her own process. I was so afraid that she was not going to choose to retire. But I was attached to an outcome that was her choice and her life. And I had to let go of my desire to make her see the right thing to do. To grab and clutch. So how does Piercy recommend that we love? Consciously, conscientiously, concretely, constructively. I think she could have added with self-control. Of course, that would have ruined the alliteration. But that's what it really takes, this loving, having without holding, loving without attachment. It means knowing your own boundaries. It means knowing what's about you and what's about the other person. Setting these boundaries firmly and with love. It means not expecting someone else to fulfill you. It takes trust and faith. It takes respect. It takes minimizing your ego or not letting your ego be the one to lead the way. Now, I'm not saying that this loving without attachment, this loving differently, is easy. In fact, I think it's one of the hardest things that we can do in our lives, loving without attachment. It's a daily struggle. It's daily choices. It's one weekly Al-Anon meeting after another. Ask the parent who has a child who's addicted to drugs. Ask the spouse who's married to the alcoholic. I was trained as a child that it was my responsibility to make sure my mother was happy. And one of my great challenges in life was separating myself from this expectation and realizing that it was not my responsibility. Disconnecting, severing the attachment. I had to separate myself from my family for a time in order to learn to love my mother for exactly who she is. Not the mother that I always dreamed of having, not the mother that she projected being, but loving her exactly who she was without expectation. Learning to love differently is hard. Learning to love wide open is hard because you can't be guaranteed that things will turn out the way you want them to. But you can't be guaranteed that anyway. Now, Piercy is very clear that the rewards of loving wide open are significant. Nothing less than liberation and fulfillment. The poem says, "I can't do it, you say, it's killing me." But you thrive, you glow on the street like a neon raspberry. I can't think of anything more alive and energized than a neon raspberry. Have you known anyone who has loved fully and without expectation? Loving wide open? Maybe my grandmother gave that to me, that loving fully and without expectation. I think the Dalai Lama embodies this loving, this lightness and loving without attachment. Now, you could say the Dalai Lama, well, he doesn't have a family, he doesn't have obligations to an individual. But the Dalai Lama is a spiritual leader of an occupied country and far away from his people. And yet, he can love and hold that attachment lightly. When have you been able to love without attachments? How have you been able to have without holding?
All right, the last poem is called In Blackwater Woods by Mary Oliver. Mary Oliver was born and raised in Maple Hill Heights, a suburb of Cleveland, Ohio. A prolific writer of both poetry and prose, Oliver routinely published a new book every year or two. Her main themes continue to be the intersection between the human and the natural world, as well as the limits of human consciousness and language in articulating such a meaning. She died in early 2019. She was 83. This poem was written in 1983. In Blackwater Woods, Mary Oliver. Look, the trees are turning their own bodies into pillars of light, are giving off the rich fragrance of cinnamon and fulfillment. The long tapers of cattails are bursting and floating away over the blue shoulders of the ponds. And every pond, no matter what its name is nameless now. Every year, everything I have ever learned in my lifetime leads back to this, the fires and the black river of loss, whose other side is salvation, whose meaning none of us will ever know. To live in this world, you must be able to do three things: to love what is mortal, to hold it against your bones, knowing your own life depends upon it, and when the time comes to let it go, let it go.
Mary Oliver's power is drawing on the wisdom of nature for her lessons. She does it very well, reminding us of how our lives are bound up in the cycles of nature. I have two takeaways from this poem. The first is the idea of profound humility, letting go of our own self-importance as humans, letting go of our own self-importance in our lives. She says, every pond, no matter its name, is nameless now. The cycles of life and death are always present with us. Each year has its growth, and our lives have our growth, our peak, and our decline, just as that pond comes into fullness in summer and becomes nameless, so too will we pass from the world's consciousness. She also asks us to let go of this idea that we will know everything, that everything is knowable. She says, every year, everything I have ever learned in my lifetime leads back to this, the fires and the black river of loss, whose other side is salvation, whose meaning none of us will ever know. Letting go is not natural. It's not a natural way of being for humans. That's why nature is such a powerful teacher. We have to work at letting go. We tend to hold on to things, wanting to be able to reclaim feelings or experiences. I don't want to let go of that. We want to hold relationships at their best, keep our memories tight, hold on to those moments of triumphs, wishing that things could stay the same, stay at their best. And we want to be remembered as well. We want to believe that we make a difference in these lives we leave on our earth. But that's not how it works. We don't get to stop the clock. The cycles of the earth go on and on. There is change, there is growth, there is loss, there is death. Mary Oliver passed away this year, a sad loss for many of us to imagine there won't be any more Mary Oliver poems. She wrote a beautiful poem about death that I read at a memorial service recently. But for UUs, we don't have an attachment to what happens to us after death. Most of us believe that we let go into some kind of abyss. And yet, we also want to control what happens to our money, what happens to our legacy. You are only the residue of how you lived. What is left is the impact that you've made on people, most of which you'll never know in your lifetime. And so we must learn to let go every single day. Let go of attachments, of expectations, of having everything the way we want it, or thinking that we should have everything the way we want it. Life offers us this lesson over and over again. The earth offers us this lesson. And if we can learn it, we can truly thrive. And if we can learn it, we can give space to others so that they too can thrive. It's a paradox, but letting go of attachments and expectations allows us to love more deeply and more completely. Learning to let go allows us to feel more deeply connected. Let's give Mary Oliver the last word.